This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It's Pick Six with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullion Haw starts now.
Were you shocked to read the White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf open to selling the team and has had active discussion with a group led by former MLB pitcher Dave Stewart? What does that mean in terms of the White Sox potentially leaving Chicago? Stewart has tried to buy the Oakland Coliseum in the past, currently trying to bring a women's soccer team to Nashville. Is this just the beginning of a process? How long will it take?
Oh, I think this is the beginning. I don't know that it's going to happen. But I think the preliminary talks would just be the beginning. I would hope that there, if indeed the White Sox are for sale, if indeed they are actively pursuing it, I would hope there will be a lot of groups that would be involved in it that would want to come in and do something with the White Sox and keep the White Sox in Chicago. And I would hope that that would be a priority for whatever you do. I think it's curious to me. Dave Stewart, I don't know enough about Dave Stewart. I don't believe he's the guy with the deep pockets. So I think we'd have to find out where the money is. You know, sometimes people come in and it looks like there's a partnership and it turns out that one guy actually was the moving force of the whole thing all along. And that's a reference to back in 1981 when Jerry bought the team with his partnership group for about $20 million. Look, you know, they're what are they worth? $2.5 billion?
About that.
So, yeah. I mean, there are not many people that have that kind of coin, but it's a big town, Chicago. If indeed they're selling, and I will say, you know, Jerry on many occasions, multiple occasions anyway, has said that that the Sox will be under his ownership until he shuffles off this mortal coil. And that Michael Reinsdorf has been instructed to sell the team at that point. So I've kind of operated under that belief all along, and this is obviously altering that. So I don't know that's what will happen here. I don't know how far along this sort of thing is. But if you are actually selling a $2.5 billion product, don't you want to know if you can get $3 billion for it? Isn't there someone out there that's got $2.7 billion? What's the difference between $2.6 billion versus $2.5 billion? That's a ton of money.
A lot of money.
A ton of money. So I have a hard time believing that you would just have secret negotiations and sell the team, and I hope that's not the case.
Well, it's a hell of an investment, that's for sure. His group did a great job over the last 40 years. I thought that was interesting, too, hearing that this is the second longest owned franchise in baseball behind the Steinbrenner family,
the White Sox, and then the Twins.
Pretty amazing. Now the Twins, the difference there is they have a fairly new stadium also. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the Twins are, you know, they can't use that as leverage. You know, maybe this is a big game of chicken, right? But to be clear, this is Chicago. I want Chicago to have two baseball teams. It means something to have an American League and a National League team in your city. That means you're big time. So I don't want the Sox to go anywhere. It's just a question of, you know, could Jerry's group say, listen, we're open to, we're all ears. We're all ears. But the first five years you own it, you can't leave. Like something like that to kind of ensure at least Sox fans have that long to have the team. Because and let's be honest, we brought this up in the first segment. You guys brought this up in the first segment. Would you want, if you were to lose the Sox, would you then want another city to lose their team so that you could have a new team? Would that pacify people? I don't think so. I don't think that's a way to go about it. So this is big business. That's what this is. And I think Jerry's I don't think Jerry's calling people. I think Jerry's sitting there and taking calls and taking meetings on this topic.
And they might be aggressively seeking that Dave Stewart is part of a potential ownership group called Music City Baseball, formed several years ago, including real estate developer John Lohr, former U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President, our guy Bob Kendrick, and get this, former Titans running back Eddie George. So this is the group.
Love Eddie.
Love Eddie George, great actor.
Eddie came into the studio.
Great singer.
Gave me tickets.
Wasn't that awesome?
To Chicago.
We love Eddie George.
He performed in it.
Keep him in Chicago. But there's a very much a Nashville vibe to that ownership group. And so you wonder about the inclusion there. But I do think, big picture, let's look at what's going on here in the city of Chicago and hope the White Sox stay here. This was shocking yesterday in terms of the headline that it was out there, that it just appeared on the Athletics website. They broke the story. It also, though, is in conjunction with what's going on in as the White Sox try to convince people that building on the patch of land in the South Loop, known as the 78 at Clark and Roosevelt, 62 acres there, is going to be part of a $9 billion investment into the city of Chicago. That, to me, if you're talking about seven of that $9 billion being private investment, there's still some public subsidies that would be part of that. I wonder, Mully, and this may be a broader debate, is that more likely to happen than, say, the Bears building on the South Lot? And is this part of that, I don't want to say leverage ploy, but it certainly gives you reason to wonder, boy, if it's either building on the South Lot, or I'm sorry, the South Loop, a White Sox stadium as part of this investment, $9 billion investment in the city, or losing the White Sox, I think you want to get building. You want to get shovels in the ground. I mean, so you understand the impetus if this is all part of that conversation. We're speculating. That's all we can do right now. The White Sox are denying it. But I think there's a lot more information to learn. There's a lot of things that we don't know. How long will it take? Well, I think it's going to take a while, especially if you're talking about them staying in Chicago, because I think if they stay in Chicago, we're going to be talking about a new ballpark.
Who's the money behind the 78? Isn't there some
related Midwest?
Yes. So do they have an extra $2.5 billion if they need an anchor tenant?
I don't know. They need an anchor tenant.
So
they don't want to lose the White Sox.
So why not buy the White Sox if Dave Stewart's going to do it?
The White Sox are, according to Forbes, valued at $2.05 billion, according to the latest valuation. It's a good question.
I'm not going to take any questions.
What is more likely to happen? The White Sox announced this offseason plans to build on the plot of land called the 78 in the South Loop, or the White Sox announcing plans to sell the team to a group led by Dave Stewart. How realistic is either option?
Well, this is the big question. I don't know that we can answer that today. I think we could just guess. These are educated guesses. Off-season, this is a big off-season for the White Sox in terms of what they're doing with their roster, their minor league roster in a major league division. They have a lot of ground to cover there. That's the baseball part of it. The business part of this is that they have I think if they had their druthers, they would get the stadium deal approved in the South Loop, begin moving in that direction, and that would probably take the sale of the team off the table, unless Dave Stewart were interested, or this group were interested in keeping it in the city. And I suppose that could be conceivable. It doesn't seem likely. It doesn't seem likely only because of the people that Dave Stewart so far has been aligned with. I just told you who that was. The name of the group is the Music City Baseball Group. So are they going to pivot now and set their sights on keeping a team or buying a team and keeping it in Chicago? There's so much what we don't know. It would be great to line up Bob Kendrick to talk to him about what he might think about all this. I think it's important, too, to point out that Jerry Reinsdorf is looking at and talking to people surrounding this yesterday. They were surprised, but they also, when they heard it was Dave Stewart, Jerry Reinsdorf, I think, would like to sell, if he does sell, to a minority-led ownership group. That's what the criteria this would meet. But to pick one or the other, to say which one is more likely, we would just be guessing. But right now, that's all we're really left to do.
Well, how about this? Let's throw a little fly into the ointment. Mully, you talked about the team getting up to $3 billion potentially. what's the cost of the 78? Why can't Jerry Reinsdorf and his group buy the 78, much like the Bears bought Arlington Heights, and now have that in their back pocket to either eventually, or does that make the, they never even have to break ground. Now they have a place for the new owner. We own the land. We own this great spot for you, new owner, to do this. And how much is this Dave Stewart, Tony La Russa relationship involved in all of this? What's that connection? I'm sure there's got to be something. Don't tell me there's nothing there. There's got to be something there. So, hey, how about the White Sox buy the 78 and just sit on it and say, okay, here, now we want $3 billion for this franchise.
Yeah, they can't do that. The 78 is owned. That all that land is owned by Related Midwest.
But Right? Everything's for sale, right? Isn't everything for sale? If everybody's got a price?
I don't know that that is for sale, and I don't know that that's a realistic option for them to do that or to go somewhere else, wherever that might be, and try to put some sort of a plan together. Listen, I don't want the Sox to leave Chicago. It was weird last night because the story broke, and then I was talking to my wife and my daughter. My daughter's like, well, what baseball team will we follow? And my wife's like, well, we'd become Tigers fans. I'm like, because she's from Detroit.
And what was your face was like?
I'm like, well, whatever happens, we're not Tigers fans. It was pretty funny. But we did. It was a real dilemma. And I sat there just for a few minutes contemplating, what would I do? Like, what do you do? You hear these stories about people losing their team and never following them again. And, you know, I had a friend of mine whose dad was a Chicago Cardinals fan, and they left, and he became kind of he was kind of a Bear fan, but I think there was a hesitation somehow, and he also was aware of everything that the Cardinals were doing, even though they were long gone from Chicago and twice removed. So, yeah, I would hate to have that happen. I would hate to, it would drive me crazy. You know what's funny is, like, I'm going to Boston this weekend. There, it is, they are the Sox. And, you know, it's the Shy Sox, or, you know, like, we call them the Bo Sox.
The Bo Sox.
Yeah. They think of themselves as just the Sox, and they're not. It's weird.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
And that's the big question, right?
Big time, 7 o'clock. What's your reaction to the Bears tight end Cole Kmet being named the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week after serving as an emergency long snapper after Scott Daly went down with a knee injury in London during the Bears' 35-16 victory over Jacksonville? Kmet had 5 successful snaps on 5 extra points, 2 of which he had a role in as scoring the touchdown. Catching those passes, can you believe he's the first ever long snapper to win the honor?
That is absolutely, first of all, it's hysterical that this has happened. Big Z wrote a story about it where he talked to Patrick Manley. Pat Manley is probably the greatest long snapper in league history, and he did it forever. And this is the first long snapper to ever get this particular award. It just tells you how much we don't appreciate long snappers and how much a guy being an emergency fill-in. And you know what else is hilarious? Is Cairo Santos said it after the game. We talked about it the next morning. He said he's going to be the special teams player of the week. And sure enough, he is. And he isn't just the special teams player of the week. He's the first ever long snapper to win the award. That's insane. That is insane. But it's really amusing. I got a kick out of it. I thought it was funny. I can't think of anybody that did anything spectacular that would be miffed because you had a guy that came in as an emergency replacement. I mean, I'm not capable of breaking down every snap and saying that one was slightly higher than that should have been, etc. I'm glad they didn't have to punt, and I'm glad that they that Daly seems like he's going to be okay, and they have a guy on the practice squad now who can fill in.
I think it's a joke, and I like Cole Kmet. I mean, Cole Kmet has been the topic of very spirited debates on this very show, is being drafted by the Bears because of where he came from. Now, if you would have put the punt in, if you would have snapped punts, I think maybe now we could have a conversation. Well, why not name him the offensive player of the week and throw in the fact that he did what he did on special teams? Like, throw that part into the reason we gave him offensive player of the week. I mean, it went to a running back from the Buccaneers that probably nobody's ever heard of before until, you know, he had a nice day, don't get me wrong, but I mean, how many people knew who Sean Tucker was prior to last week's game when they played against the Saints, who don't play a lick of defense? So this is a mark on it. It's you said amusing. Yeah, it's amusing. It's laugh out loud. It's a joke.
I kind of agree. I think that there were also some quarterbacks who deserved offensive player of the week consideration that Sean Tucker, with due respect to the Tampa Bay running back, they scored 51 points and amassed 590 yards and all the things, but I don't know that that was better than Jared Goff. Heck, Caleb Williams had a claim to, if he wanted to make that argument.
Well, he won an award, David.
What was
Caleb,
that?
Caleb, he won the FedEx Air
Award.
That's
great. That's great. There are a lot of awards to give out. This one's kind of silly. Cole Kmet getting this award seems kind of like tongue-in-cheek. Ha, ha, ha. Dude, we're going to do this week. Patrick Manley should be insulted.
Oh, my God.
Every kicker in the NFL should be insulted. I think five snaps, and the two of them were high, according to Flusi. So, yeah, you know, we can talk about what a great team guy he is and being able to do this in a pinch and emergency long snapper, and it's very amusing. And it's a great story, but I don't think they give awards for that. If they did, boy, every week we'd have a new nomination.
So has this award spoiled the story? The great day that Kmet had,
no.
Now that he's honored for it,
no.
It's ruined.
No, I think it just makes me wonder if Frank Kmet was on the committee.
No, it's a valid question, certainly on the minds of a lot of people.
That's the voice of Casey Johnson. He'll be here with the guys at 7:40. What was your takeaway from Lonzo Ball's first appearance with the Bulls in 33 months? How did you feel when you heard he's going to be on a 16 minutes time limit for the foreseeable future? It's obviously a feel-good story, but is it a sustainable one?
I'm going to say this morning, that I am no longer going to declare anything about Lonzo Ball in terms of what he can't do or what we should ignore. I watched last night and I realized that I never expected to see what I was watching. And good for him. I hope that he considers that a triumph. Cartilage transplant surgery is something that no other NBA player has overcome to the extent that he has overcome. Now, there are other examples of other comebacks that we talked about yesterday. There's an NHL player, Gabriel Landeskog, for the Colorado Avalanche, coming back from a similar surgery. He's not as far along as Lonzo Ball, but he's watching every move. Dr. Brian Cole did both surgeries, and he's got to feel like $1 million this morning. What we saw last night with Lonzo Ball playing effectively in an NBA game, preseason or not, is remarkable, is amazing, and it will check me. I am not going to question how far he can come or go with this moving forward. He played 15 minutes last night. If he can play 15 minutes in an NBA game during the regular season on a semi-regular basis and help the Bulls, then I think we should only stand up and applaud or privately just marvel at his success rate and what he has been able to accomplish. So is it sustainable? Boy, I hope so.
I hope so as well, David. The other thing is that he made some threes. Bulls need to make threes. They got one more three than the Timberwolves last night. I know it's a preseason game, but they needed that one more three, and he can shoot that shot. So good for him. Good story. And he's got me watching preseason NBA basketball. I never thought I'd do that.
I find this kind of a difficult thing to talk about. The 16-minute time limit I don't like it. It means that you're and the way they're doing it, that like the plan was to go, you know, four different 4-minute stints. So he can come at, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of when Michael Jordan came back from his surgery in year two or whatever his leg
85.
Issue was. It was his second year with the team. And they were battling to try to make the playoffs. And Jordan would come in and just play his rear end off. He'd be running up and down the court. He'd be doing everything. And they would get close, and then they'd pull him out of the game. And he was so frustrated. I just don't know. I mean, I think it's the wise thing to do with this particular. It's hard to talk about it. I felt that he was somewhat tentative. I felt that he is now a perimeter player, and he used to be a different player than that. I think maybe, like, when you saw him go get that ball out of bounds, maybe this is the sort of thing that will build up and that we'll see change. Is it sustainable? Is a great question. And I'm all here for it, and I hope to God it is sustainable, and I hope he can play for years to come. I have no idea. As you say, no one has ever attempted to come back from an injury like this. We were hard-pressed to find any feel-good stories that took place after 33 months. That there are 36 months in 3 years, for the love of God. So it's extraordinary the amount of time that he's missed. And it's great that he got back on the court and he got a standing ovation. You feel good for the guy. But I think it's an impossible question as to what happens next. I like that you don't want to comment. You want to stay out of it. But I mean, I'm not going to tell the guy what he can and can't do in his life. I just wonder if this is ultimately going to work out. It's just a question you have to contemplate.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Besides Lonzo Ball, what else stood out about Wednesday night's preseason game against the Timberwolves? How concerned are you about the injuries that keep mounting on players trying to be part of the rotation? Do the Bulls have a good or a bad?
The Bulls are fun to watch, man. They scored 125 points. They were up and down the floor. They were jacking up threes. They won the game. The entertaining style that they play was fun. It was fun to see. I don't know how the rotation is going to work, because you have a starting five, and then you, with a guy like Billy, it's usually there are four players. You don't want to go much deeper than that because there's not enough time for everybody. I don't know how you're limiting who the four are. I don't know if you're going to have to monitor weekly practices to figure that out. But you usually settle in on a particular group. The strength of this team is that they got like three different groups. So I am going to be really curious to see who they limit, who they pick. And I just think it's a fascinating story. I love that they're wide open and running like hell. I think that's fun. They're younger. Will any of this matter when the regular season starts and guys are playing minutes after minutes and they're giving calls to guys? You know, Edwards was complaining yesterday he didn't get a couple of calls. He'll get those when the regular season starts.
Talen Horton Tucker
is a good player.
That's what stood out to me last night, watching more preseason basketball than I ever thought I would. Talen Horton Tucker. Let's see what these injuries are. Listening to the pregame last night, they talked about the injuries. Heard some Casey Johnson reports. Nothing's like catastrophic. It more sounds like aches and pains and getting in shape. So let's see who plays Friday. Let's see how guys wake up today coming off that game. Who plays on Friday? That kind of thing. I'm not worried about the injuries yet, but who stood out to me? Talen Horton Tucker.
You're talking about injuries to Io, to Julian Phillips, and maybe Bezelis. Those are the three guys you wonder how they fit in. We know Io will be part of the rotation. You wonder if Talen Horton Tucker will. As he played his way in, he had 17 points. That was a good sign. What stood out to me was the Bulls had seven guys in double figures, seven guys who could fill it up, and they hit 18 of 41 threes, We thought 50 threes again? No. They only needed 41, but they hit 18 of them. So they shot at a higher clip from three-point range, which allowed them to play at the pace they desire. And Billy Donovan had to be thrilled because the Timberwolves were jacking up threes too. They didn't hit as many as the Bulls did. But the Bulls, if that is their style, then they're going to need people to knock them down those shots. And Lonzo Ball, in 10 to 15 minutes, can come in and hit a couple threes and space the floor, if you will. So I thought the Bulls were entertaining last night. I don't know if it means anything because it is only preseason, but they had to be very, very encouraged by the showing.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Do you think the Cub fans would rather see Anthony Rizzo win a pennant and maybe a World Series with the Yankees, or would they resent the fact that one of their favorite Cubs is making history with another team? How conflicted are your feelings?
Wow. I just wondered that watching him the other night get a double, celebrate on the base paths, and think, well, if this is game seven and Anthony Rizzo gets the big hit and the Yankees celebrate and make history, how are you going to feel about Anthony Rizzo? Because he's going to have another one of those legacy moments. He's, you know, if he catches the last out, is he going to put the ball in his back pocket? And then he's going to have something else as a souvenir. Does he put it on top of the Cub baseball in his mantle? Or does he put it below it? Where would it rank in his mind at this stage of his career? When he's hobbling along, hasn't had a great year? As a Cub fan, you're very conflicted, I think. Or are you? I would be happy for Anthony Rizzo, but I would think that the first time you won would be the most special time. But I think that might be wishful thinking and projecting. I'm not quite sure how he would answer that, but I would be very curious. So I guess overall happy for him.
Yes, happy for him, believe it or not. I have no problem with that at all. I mean, all of these guys overall have not been good. I mean, he's the only one that's been okay.
No conflict?
No conflict at all.
Wow.
Sorry to disappoint.
I'm a little disappointed.
Sorry.
I thought you were filled with conflict.
Well, that's not the question.
Oh. I just heard you say no conflict at all. I thought it was really funny. Did you see this bullpen coach guy's name is Mike Harkey?
Yeah.
He was saying that they were in the bullpen. He gets really tense, and everybody's sitting there, and you're watching the game, and when the phone rings, everyone jumps.
In the fourth inning. Yeah.
Rizzo calls every game, and he has to go yell at him. He's like, they're like, why does he call? And he's like, because he's playing with the phone. He likes to play with the phone. There's something about having fun in baseball. It's something about, like, the kid's game, like, I'm going to make a great call in the bullpen, that is just delightful to me. I like this story with Anthony Rizzo. I think it's amazing how many of those ex-Cubs didn't do anything after they left, and how many Hall of Fame Cubs were on that team, right? How many guys who you thought were Hall of Famers went on to Hall of Fame careers? So I don't know that I don't think Anthony Rizzo's a Hall of Famer. But I don't think they win that World Series without him. I think he was a very important player in that particular stretch. And I think that if he can win one as a older player, you know, hanging on and battling back, I think it'd be great. And it would really top off his career in a wonderful way. And I, you know, I respect you.
Well played.
All right, we got the extra point next. It's Molly and Haw on the Score.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.